ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I remember this lady, Mary, being so impressed by us. She was like, "Where are you girls from?" We're like, "Oh, we're Australians. We're traveling in our car." And she was so impressed that she gave us $50. And then I think at the next service station, we met these other guys who were selling weed, and we just used Mary's $50 to. It's like, thank you, Mary.
The circle of life.
I know. Yo, they want to know.
Comedian Lizzie Hu has been gracing our stages and screens relentlessly over the past few years. When she's not doing stand-up, she's popping up on Have You Been Paying Attention and hosting her own podcast, The Lizzie Hu Show. She's even the voice of an airline, which I cannot say the name of because this is the ABC. And that voice is here to Take Five. Welcome, Lizzie.
Alison.
So excited to have you in to Take Five.
Oh, this is so cool.
We haven't even started yet, but you are going straight to the top of my faves list because you sent me your songs in perfect chronology with a little blurb for each choice. No one does this. I reckon it's probably I love it though. In the 20-year history of Take Five, I reckon I've had about five people do that.
No way. Who is my crew? I want to know who my peers are.
People who care for the people that they are being interviewed by, honestly.
Yeah. I think it's also a reminder for me because it's like, okay, yes, I can do that. Yeah.
You'd write
it
down.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Type A sometimes.
I celebrate it. I see you.
Yeah.
I feel you. And because of that, I know this is going to be a ripper conversation. Mm-hmm. You are a master storyteller. Anybody who's ever seen you do stand-up maybe follows you on socials and sees the great stories you tell there. You really do say yes to every adventure thrown your way, which is why I gave you the theme, Lizzie's Life Escapades. When you read that theme pitch, how easily did the songs and stories come to mind?
Oh, it was too hard. I had five songs for just one story. So I was like, oh, God, I can only pick one song. I was messaging friends of the time because I was kind of theming it around trips that I'd done over the years.
Yeah.
And I was messaging friends from those trips going like, hey, do you remember any songs? And like one of my friends, my best mate, she just came back with like five songs. She's like, remember this? Do you remember that? And this and that. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this
How
is too hard.
Yeah. So music is really part of the map of your adventures too, right? It sounds like you've always got a soundtrack happening when you're going off on these big adventures.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I feel like music has always been a really big part of my life. Like grew up playing music, not very good. My brother he's a really good guitarist. Like he still plays, like that's his sort of outlet. But we always grew up like talking about music, buying CDs together. And I think, yeah, traveling with the Discman, with the MP3 players.
Yes.
And now
the iPod Nano.
Oh my gosh, I had a Nano. There was always something that we were listening to. Traveling.
What did you play when you were a little kid?
Oh my gosh. Zen. In primary school, I was a big master of the electronic organ.
Oh, wow.
So that was my introduction to 80s music because I swear they did not make an organ songbook after the 80s. So it was Fame, Copacabana. White A Shade of Pale, like of them.
It's a great foundation, in my opinion.
Every Thursday afternoon, I would go to the Forte School of Music in Coorparoo, and I would play the organ with this guy. We called him Mr. Ken because that was cool. And Mr. Ken had this great organ, and he had a hard disk, so we could loop ourselves with the hard disk.
Incredible.
It was great. And he also wrote jingles. So for the first 10 minutes of every lesson was Mr. Ken telling me about a jingle he'd written for a local shopping centre.
Incredible. I love people who write jingles because those jingles, they stay with you for your whole life. It's like there's an art to it.
I still remember this one about Red Bank Plaza shopping centre.
Want to give us a rendition? Or
Red Bank Plaza, it's happening now. Chin, chin, chin. Yeah.
Sounds like the place to be.
Yeah. Oh, not really.
That isn't one of your choices in your Take Five, sadly, but a little side five there. Lizzie Hu with her life escapades is what we're going to be wandering through over the next little while. And your first choice is, frankly, a millennial jackpot. Oh, Arctic Monkeys, Dancing Shoes. The only reason that you came is what you scan for. Where does this take you?
Oh my gosh, this takes me back. It's like 2006. I'm with two of my very good friends I'm still friends with today. We finished uni. We went over to Canada. We did the whole ski season thing. We ended up staying for the summer. And we bought this terrible car. It was a Plymouth Voyager, whatever, if that means anything to you.
It's like a big sedan or something?
It's like Chevy Chase style. It had wood paneling.
This is a dream to me.
Yeah, it was.
You're
so
basically
old.
In an American family rom-com.
We were. We loved this car and we bought it off this guy. Originally, it was $1,000. And then a couple of days later, he called us and he's like, I'll drop the price because something's fallen apart. He's like, but I fixed it up with a bit of tin foil. And we're like, okay.
Great.
He's like, you just need to take it to the mechanics and get it welded on. So we bought it for $500.
Wow.
I know. What a steal. A whole car.
Yeah.
And then we took it to the mechanics and welded this bit on. And then we never did any maintenance on that car. We drove it everywhere. We drove it everywhere in Canada. It was a great car. We took it up the mountains. It was beautiful. And we could sleep in the back. The seats would fold down, three of us across the back. And then we had this great idea when we left Canada at the end of summer. Let's drive to Mexico.
It's a long drive.
It's a long drive.
Which
down
side
Highway
of Canada are you on? The east coast, the west coast, the middle?
We're on the west coast.
Okay.
So two of us are like real gung-ho about it, not thinking. And there's one friend, my best friend, Sarah, and she's like, guys, I just don't think we should be driving into Mexico. And we're like, all right, buzzkill. And so we end up doing it, but the car fails us. But in this time, we drove for a few weeks, but we only had two CDs in the car because it was MP3 time. So we had all these MP3 players, but the CD player in the car, like the makeshift CD player in the car, would only play CDs.
Mm-hmm.
We had two of them. It was Radiohead, Kid A. And the Arctic Monkeys.
It's a good album.
Yeah. Anytime I hear anything from this, I'm just straight back on the highway. I'm with my friends. We had the wildest time. You know, we were stopping at service stations and I remember this lady, Mary, being so impressed by us. She was like, where are you girls from? We're like, oh, we're Australians. We're traveling in our car. And she was so impressed that she gave us $50. And we're like, wow, that's all we have to do. We just have to talk. She gave us $50. And then I think at the next service station, we met these other guys who were selling weed. And we just used Mary's $50 to buy it. It's like, thank you, Mary.
The circle of life.
I know. The lights are flashing down in here tonight. And so my exchange a glance.
So did the car make it down to Mexico?
No. It had a few problems. We could hear it. The handbrake wasn't really working. We could hear it making a few questionable noises. And we drive through this town outside of LA called Bakersfield.
I know Bakersfield well.
Yeah. Someone told me.
It's a bit bleak. Very good thrift stores there, though.
Oh, really? Yeah. A bit bleak. I told this to an American comedian how I went to Bakersfield, and he's like, oh, if meth was a town. And I was like, oh, God. And we felt that when we drove through. We're like, oh, that wasn't a very nice town. And then, honestly, about half an hour later, our car just broke down. We were on the highway. We pulled over. Highway patrol drove us, towed our car, and drove us to a Motel 8. And we had to stay there for a few days while our car was getting fixed. But we couldn't salvage it. So.
So how did you make the rest of the journey?
The old bus.
Oh, the Greyhound bus. No.
I know. We Greyhound bus to Vegas. And then we caught a plane.
Oh, my God.
I know. So we never got to Mexico in the car, but in hindsight, probably a really good thing.
And what an incredible soundtrack for all of those memories. Yeah, but it's so absurd for you to say the first word. So you're waiting and waiting. And the only reason that you came is to what you're scared for.
Go and mention your name.
you'll just do the same as they all do and hope for the best. The only reason that you came, so what you scared for? Why don't you always do the same? It's what you're there for, but no!
I'm a big believer in how you're raised is how you go into the world. Some people come from kind of straight-laced families and then go off and do something completely different. But were you raised in an adventurous family, in the kind of a family that says, yes, let's do this?
Oh, my gosh, we're all crazy. The who's are eccentric. I'm the most normal, Zan.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, I think it comes from mum. She travelled to Malaysia and Southeast Asia in, like, the late 60s, 70s as a backpacker from Toowoomba. She's from Toowoomba in Queensland, which is a pretty conservative place.
Mm.
She's like, grew up very conservative Catholic and then ended up backpacking. That's where my mum met my dad. To do that in the 70s from Toowoomba, like, that's an adventurous spirit. I think she is the most curious and adventurous person that I know. Even recently, I was hanging out with her in Sydney. She came down to Sydney. She's 80 years old now. And we went to the fish market and she's like, I want to try something I've never had before. And I'm like, at 80 years old, like, you kind of think you would just stick to your tried and tested things. But she's like, no, I want to try different things. And I just think that a lot of my curiosity and adventurous spirit comes from her.
Mm.
I also had dad's family. Dad's from Malaysia, but all of his sisters and brothers lived overseas.
Mm.
So growing up in Australia, we always had visitors from like the UK or Canada or Malaysia. And I feel like from a very young age, I just had this very worldly perspective of, you know, where people lived. And I always wanted to travel. And as soon as I left university, I was like, see ya.
The world was there and it was an opportunity for you to go there. Was it accessible?
It was accessible. It's not like when we were kids. I think I went to Malaysia once when I was a child. And our holidays, they were close to the home. Like, I don't think we ever holidayed more than 2 hours from Brisbane.
Mm.
They were fun holidays. They were camping holidays and we did lots of cool stuff. But I always had this like real itch to just travel and see the world.
Having two older brothers too, because I'm in the same boat. I've got two older brothers. And not only do they give you great recommendations and kind of open the world up to you, but in the best of ways, they break the parents in. And no matter how adventurous the parents are, by the time you come along as the youngest of a family of three, I had such independence as a kid, because I think by the time I came along, my parents were like, oh, you'll sort it out, figure it out, we're done.
100%. That's so true.
Which gives you that green light to go off and do things. Yeah. And it's like, it's going to be okay because our other two children, they showed us it was okay. And if it wasn't, then, you know.
They were so much worse than me. I didn't have much to live up to, Zan. I was an angel. You saw this email, perfectly typed out.
Lizzie who? Life's Escapades is the theme that I've given Lizzie. Let's skip to 2010 with your next choice. Not a song from 2010, an absolute classic, an amazing tune called Don't Stop Believing. Yes, it's Journey.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere.
What escapade did this take you to?
Oh, this takes me to my Japan days. This is mid-2000s. I met this guy in Brisbane, an Aussie guy, and he had a business in Japan as a photographer in the ski town Niseko. I followed him over there and I did some work with him, and then I had my own job and did all these like little odd jobs, as you do in a ski town, which I loved. So I did the winters, which were jam-packed, and there were a lot of foreigners there, and I was working nights, I was working days, I was snowboarding. Like, it was just, you're drinking a lot, it's just party. And then during the summers, everyone clears out and there's not a lot going on. So, and my Japanese was very basic, and I remember just like walking up mountains by myself and getting to the top of the mountain being like, what the hell am I doing here? Mm. This is crazy. This isn't my life. But in that time, it was kind of like, it was a good time and a sad time. But in that time, I watched a lot of Glee. It was the start of Glee. And I would just watch, like, I would stream pirated Glee on my laptop. Don't Stop Believing was a huge Glee track.
Mm.
I think they went to regionals with this track.
He took the midnight train.
This became my karaoke song there. Karaoke, big part of Japanese drinking culture.
Yeah.
And this was what I would bang out.
Just a small town girl living in a modern world.
Yeah, this is it. It did feel like that because this town was so tiny.
When you were over there, was that your first time living away from home?
No, I'd done the Canada thing before. Yeah. I'd done a few skeezins before the Japan one.
Did you just call them skeezins?
Skeezins. I don't, but I like it. Skeezins.
Just get rid of a syllable. Yeah. Just cut it out. Skeezins.
Skeezins. Skeezins, mate.
Captured it. Skeezins.
We did skeezins.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
I think it works.
Yeah, it does. No, I'd done a skeezin. I'd done a skeezin in Colorado during my university summer break.
Oh, nice.
And then I'd done that Canada thing and I did a London thing as well. In my 20s, I was just back and forth to Australia. I'd get back to Australia and be like, oh, don't think I want to be here. And then I'd just go again. Like I'd save my money and go again. And yeah, Japan was a bit of that. And I stayed there for almost 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
3 years in Japan. Incredible. Mm. And another adventure in Lizzie's life escapades. It's hard to say that. I'm realizing now that I've written that theme.
Lizzie's life escapades.
Really got to enunciate it.
Yeah.
What an amazing song. I'm imagining you there with a little cup of sake.
Oh, yeah.
One of those songs that no matter how many times you hear it, it still packs a punch, doesn't it?
So good.
Such an incredible song. Journey, Don't Stop Believin', as chosen by Lizzie Hu, taking 5 with Lizzie's Life Escapades. I know that you're a massive music fan, but, you know, comedy and music go hand in hand too. Does music play a big part in your shows? You know, you've got a show happening right now in the comedy festivals around the country, but do you listen while you're writing?
I listen to a lot of Double J.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's actually quite...
You and Trent Dalton, both listening to Double J while you're writing your opuses.
I love having the radio on. I think it's a nice sound to have on in the background and talking, and you can kind of tune in when you want. You can tune out.
A little bit of community.
Yeah, I actually love it because Mum always had the radio on. She had ABC AM on, like, every day, all day, especially on the weekend. And I think I'm used to that sound. It's kind of like the sound of the cricket in the summer.
Yeah.
That comforting sound and people talking. And I live by myself, so I'm like, I love just having the radio on.
This makes me happy.
Yeah.
And what about when you're thinking about those songs that are playing as people are walking into a show, that pre-show playlist? Do you think about that long and hard?
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
I think it's important for them and for the audience and for me because I'm at the back. Sometimes Melbourne Comedy Festival, you do 23 shows or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You need that energy.
So you want that energy, obviously. And something for me, it's all about like a bit of a pump up and getting into the mood. And I want the audience to be in the same mood that I'm in. And I don't want them to come into like anything too soft. Like I kind of want it to be a little bit of a party vibe.
Mm, bring some bounce.
Yeah, bring some bounce.
Well, let's go on another adventure with you. You're taking 5 with your escapades. The next stop is 2014. Where are we headed now?
We're going to Mongolia, Zen.
Why not? Why not? Why Mongolia?
Oh, that's what my mother said. When I told her that I was moving to Mongolia for a year, I said to her, maybe sit down And I said, so I've got this Australian government volunteer position, and it's away, and it's in Mongolia. And she was like, what? Mongolia? So I did this government volunteer position. It's called AVID, Australian Volunteers for International Development. A lot of people do them. It's a big, quite a big community, and you apply for jobs and you get paid an allowance. You get accommodation allowance and living allowance. So you live pretty well. So I applied for this job as a journalist trainer. I was working in Brisbane at the time at an accounting firm as a bid and tender writer. And anyone's listening and knows what that is, it is probably one of the most boring jobs you can ever do in your life. And I was so bored that I applied for this job at work to go to Mongolia. That's where my headspace was.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to get out of here. Anywhere will do. Let's go to Mongolia. And I got the job, I think because nobody else was applying for these jobs in Mongolia. And it turned out to be one of the best years of my life. Did I know anything about Mongolia? Not at all. I had to look up and the weather and what language they spoke and where it was. But it's honestly the best year of my life to this day. Coolest thing I've ever done.
The landscape is incredible. Yeah. We think of Mongolia and we think throat singing. We think yurts. We think these vast places. Mm-hmm. We think China on one side, Russia on the other. Yep. Like, were you in a city, a small town? Where were you?
I was in Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital city,
right?
Which is a very Russian city. Mm. They were under Russian rule for a long time until till the fall of the Soviet, till 1989. And so the city is very much a Russian city. Like, there were blocks of the year where we didn't have hot water because they did the maintenance for the hot water at the one time. Like, there was just very, like, Soviet things still going on. It looked like very Soviet block buildings. There's a main square in the center of town. So that's kind of the big town. And I think 2/3 of the population live in this town. But then outside of that, every weekend we were on an adventure.
Mm.
We were going horse riding. We were just going out to a family that someone's friends knew somewhere, and you get a driver and they'd drive you out there. You might have to stop halfway to get a sheep out of the boot or something like that. And then you'd move on.
I mean, same as my adventures.
Yeah, right?
What was the landscape like there?
It was stunning. It was like the classic steppe environment. So it was just flat with mountains, very beautiful rivers, streams, snow-capped mountains. Cold, 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 like -40 in the winter.
Whoa.
Yeah. You would walk to work maybe 500 meters, and by the time you got to work, your eyelashes would be frozen. Didn't stop us going out, though, in -40. A lot of vodka was drunk.
I bet.
Yeah.
The other kind of blanket.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And, I mean, everyone drinks vodka there, but it is kind of a survival thing, like, when you're that cold. Yeah.
Warms you from the inside.
Warms you from the inside.
So what's the song that's soundtracking this incredible adventure?
So Mongolian music history is really interesting. Of course, you've got the throat singing and the traditional music, but you've also got this like real modern era because they were cut off from the world for so long and then they opened up to the world in the 90s. So their music, their modern music, their bands now have a real 90s vibe.
Right.
It's real grungy. It's just very familiar, but with a Mongolian language. They're big rappers. There was I think an Aussie actually directed and made this called Mongolian Bling. It's a documentary about the Mongolian rap scene.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's and the language, it's such a guttural language. Like, it comes from the throat. It was very hard to learn. But it really sounds good in rap. Like, it's really cool. So I think the first band to ever tour Mongolia when they opened up was Blue. That was the story that we heard. But they had, like, they were obsessed with Blue. they had a Beatles statue in one of the big streets. Like it was a common meeting place. We'll meet you at the Beatles statue.
Wow.
It was like a big apple with the four Beatles in it. They have this music festival called Playtime. Mm. And it's kind of on the river. We were warned about going there, like, it's a bit dangerous and that sort of thing. We're like, oh, whatever. And it was one of the best festivals. Peter Hook was headlining.
Amazing.
I know, but we didn't see him. We didn't see him because our favourite Mongolian band was playing, called The Lemons. And The Lemons kind of soundtracked our time there because, you know, you get into like the local music and everything. And The Lemons was awesome. So this next song is from the Lemons. I chose this particular song because it's like so spacious and it's big, and that is what Mongolia is. I want you to imagine yourself riding a horse along the steppe. There's a few eagles flying above you. There's streams nearby. And just think of the spaciousness of the wide open country.
I'm there. Let's go. Сэтгэл санаа минь сансраа тэмтрэхгүйгээр хүртээ зэрүүн нэрээ зүтлээ өөрөөсөө гарч явлаа тэндээс нэгэн шин дуудаа тэр зүг рүү хөтлөгдөө зүй тогтлыг сарниулаад үл маанам тахивлөө чингүй хөнгөн хөндөрсмэн дэлхийгээс намайг шүлөөч нэг туйлаас нөгөө рүү гэрлийн үзүүр гүйцлээ дээр тэнгэрийн зай I love that you've brought me modern Mongolian music. This is why I love Take Five. I'd never heard of this band before, and I see what you mean. It's so expansive. It's so beautiful.
It's a really cool. I just really love their music. I don't know what they're saying, but I really love it. They actually just toured Australia.
All right.
Because there's quite a big Mongolian community here.
I love that. Mm. I want to ask you a question because you mentioned that you were, what were you writing? Bid and Tender?
Oh, yeah, Bid and Tender.
But you were teaching people journalism.
Yeah.
Did you ever study journalism? Like, what happened? Is this? This sounds like they really needed someone to volunteer in Mongolia, Lizzie.
Yeah, they were scraping their barrel. They really were. So I studied marketing, and then after uni...
That's a different kind of communication. Yeah, same areas.
Kind of the same area. And then after university, I kind of fell into editorial roles. And I always wanted to be an advertising copywriter, but for some reason I never really got a job at that. I tried, but I ended up in these editorial roles. In Brisbane, I worked at a place called Map Magazine. It was quite a cool street press magazine, and we would interview so many different people. We would always have like a local dreamer, a national dreamer, and an international dreamer. And they were really like high profile people. Mm. And then when I went to Japan, also I worked at the local magazine there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I kind of had this like magazine. I had a cert for in graphic design, just saying.
You're basically a publisher.
Yeah, basically. And then when I did the accounting job, with the bid and tender job at the accounting firm, I guess I sort of got to learn how the world worked in that way. It was like a pretty big accounting firm, and you know, your eyes open up to like, oh right, this is how money's being moved around. Mm. I get it. So I kind of had that knowledge as well. And then when I went to do the job in Mongolia, it was at the Mongolian economics magazine over there. So I kind of like taped all these bits of experience together. I went, this is me. I can help you do some things, not everything, but some things. And they were like, yeah, come on over.
This is what I love about you. You just go, here, I put my hand up and, you know, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
And people say yes.
Fake it till you make it.
Yay. Not everyone does it. I'm a big advocate for just going in, diving in, figuring it out later.
Yeah, me too.
But for you, I mean, going into studying marketing, obviously having a keen desire for being a writer, which carries over to comedy, when did you start telling jokes and realize, oh, hang on, here's a different pathway?
Yeah, it was interesting because I think in those editorial roles, my writing always kind of skewed funny. And I didn't realize at the time. But then when I got back from Mongolia, I was moved to Sydney. I got a job as an account manager at a marketing agency. So that's the person that deals with clients, like you're on the phone all the time. And I was so bored. I was like, just had this epic year of like, you know, riding horses,
yeah,
drinking yak's milk and vodka and karaoke and craziness. And then I'm in Sydney, in North Sydney, just like, what have I done here? This is crazy. I needed something creative. And I started doing all these courses at Sydney Community College. One was sewing. Millinery, Zan. I did millinery.
Why not, eh?
Yeah, with all these senior ladies. It was great. And then I got the email that was like, try stand-up comedy. And I thought, yeah.
Like a course?
Yeah, we're at rock bottom. Let's do it.
I love that, though, that there's courses in learning how to do stand-up.
Yeah.
I just thought that you did it from doing it.
Well, you do it from doing it. This was four Monday nights. But to be honest, I had no idea. Like I knew what comedy was, but I didn't really grow up with stand-up comedy. I didn't watch the gala every year. You know, you meet these people in comedy like, oh, we watch the gala every year. I'm like, I couldn't tell you who a lot of the old Australian comedians were. Like, I'm just like, I don't know who that is.
You were too busy hanging out in Mongolia.
Yeah, exactly. I ended up doing this course. I loved it. And I thought, oh, this is my creative outlet. This is fun. I can do this. And I just used it as my creative outlet originally. And then I got addicted and I was just so compelled to do it. And at the start, I really enjoyed the writing part of it. I didn't love the performing part of it. That was so nerve-wracking. I was just like, yuck. Wanted to vomit, so nervous, like the whole day for a 5-minute spot at an open mic, which is terrifying. But the writing part I really enjoyed.
Mm. Can you remember the feeling of standing up at one of those open mic spots and getting the rush of someone or a group of people laughing at your jokes?
Yeah, that's what we're addicted to.
Yeah.
That's the thing that we always come back for. And it's funny because it's like just this one little moment and then you keep chasing that one little thing. It's very addictive, addictive personality thing.
Yes. Mm. Oh, but when you get it, what a rush.
Yeah, so good.
We're 5 years ahead with your next pick. It's 2019. Lizzie Hu, what's happening in your world this year?
Ooh, I am doing my first ever Melbourne Comedy Festival solo show.
Here we go.
I know, like I started really giving comedy a nudge in 2017 and just being, I don't know, so naive and blind to everything. I was like, yeah, I'll do solo. Yeah, why not? Sure. And then I applied. I got a 6 o'clock time slot and someone said to me, oh, don't take that. Because I think it was, you know, pre-COVID, people went out late still. But 6 o'clock was like, oh, death slot.
Where 6 o'clock now is like a dream.
6 o'clock. I only do 6 o'clock. I only ever want to, my audience only wants me to do 6 o'clock.
Home by 8, bed by 9.
Exactly. I'd never been to Melbourne Comedy Festival before.
Oh, wow.
I'd been to Melbourne. My brother lived down here. But when I turned up, I went to Town Hall, got my pass and that sort of thing. I was like looking around going, whoa, this is a big deal. This is like crazy. There's flags up.
Mm-hmm.
There's the chalkboard. There's people everywhere, people flying and stuff like that. I was like, well, okay, what have I committed to here? And then even going to do like my sound check and they're like, what lights do you want? I'm like, I don't know. Like, what lights do you think I should have? Should I just do what the other person has? Like, who's on after me? I'll just have what they're having. I didn't know like any of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And, but I just remember doing my show for the first time. It was 50 minutes. I'd never performed for 50 minutes before. I just had like two 20-minute sets that I kind of stuck together and top and tailed. And I thought, that'll do. And then I did the 50 minutes. And I remember seeing Tom Cashman after that in a bar. He probably doesn't remember this, but he was like, hey, how'd you go? I was like, oh, I just did my first show. He's like, oh my God, is that the first time you've ever done 50 minutes? I was like, yes. He's like, well done. And it was just like, such a nice moment, because I was like, yeah, I've done 50 minutes. I've never done that before. And now that feels kind of crazy because we do it all the time.
It's a huge commitment, though, yeah, to stand up there and talk and tell jokes and be chasing that feeling,
yeah,
of getting the laugh, telling a story, keeping the audience with you, yeah, for almost an hour. That's massive.
It was crazy. And this is
and by yourself.
I'm by myself. And this is the kind of nice thing. In the front row on my first night, I had a lot of mates that I was in Mongolia with that came to that show, and they were kind of all in the front row, and it felt really nice and special that they were all there.
All the parts of your life, yeah, in front of you, the past, the present and the,
yeah,
future.
Yeah, it's really nice.
What was the song that soundtracked this adventure?
Well, I called the show Who Am I? What's My Name? Which is a Snoop Dogg song.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of themed the poster a bit Snoop Dogg, like I had the gothic writing and everything. And I would ask the crowd every night, does anyone know that, like, the name of my show is the Snoop Dogg song title? And one person knew. One person knew that whole time. I mean, not many people coming through the door, but one person knew.
But this would set up like a history of, you know, the puns, the play on words.
Yes.
Using the Lizzie Who,
exactly,
in every show that would follow.
Exactly.
And it feels like there's infinite opportunities here for a surname like Who, obviously spelt differently to WHO, but you can really have fun with this.
Oh, every year. There was one year I tried. I thought, I'm going to just have a normal name. I'm just going to do something like profound. And then 2 weeks into that process, I thought, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You idiot. Like, this is
I was
this
gifted
is a brand.
With this.
This is a gifted. You, like, this is a comedy gift. Just use your name.
Warning. Strong language alert.
Of the sea, back to the block. Snoop Doggy Dog, funky as the doc. Went solo on that ass, but it's still the same. Long Beach is the spot where I serve my cane. Follow me, but you bet not slip, cause 9 Triz A's the year's there for me to blizz out my grip. So I ain't holding nothing back, and once again I got 5 on the 20 sack. It's like that, and as a matter of fact, cause I never hesitate to put a fool on his back.
Yeah, so keep out the manuscript. You see that it's a must, we drop gangsta.
Hold up, what's my name?
Snoop Dogg and Dogg.
Yeah, yeah.
Snoop Dogg
and Dogg. It's the bound to the wild, creeping and crawling. Yiggy, yes, yolin'. Snoop Doggy Dogg in the house with the pound like every day. And I'm right back up in you with Dr. Dre. And like I said, none of y'all can get with this. And none of y'all can get with that hit I just dropped. Cause you know it don't stop. Mr. 187 on the undercover cop. Tick tock, now by the clock, just some nuts and a cop. Rob you for your ears, then I kill you blood clocks. And I step through the fog and I creep through the smog. Cause I'm Snoop Doggy, Doggy, Doggy.
Snoop Dogg, Who Am I? What's My Name? Who is she? Lizzie Who. Your new hour of stand-up, which you're currently touring around the country, in fact, kicking off right now at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival for the next month, is called Says Who. What part of your life is this capturing?
Oh, Says who? I kind of hit a lot of the same beats every year. Characters, I should say. Like, I always talk about my dad. Mm. I talk about what's happening in my life. I always give everyone an update. So I guess that's part of my life that
It's like a Christmas card, isn't it?
It is a little bit Christmas card. It's yearly wrap-up email. You know, you still get some of those from uncles
and aunties. I do love those. They're very old school.
I love them too. It's like, yeah, you can just condense a year into an email. You don't need a whole Instagram. All my shows, and definitely in the last 2 or 3 years, have been very current.
Do you feel as though, as you look back and you're writing a show, are there ever any elements of that whole, you know, classic idea of tragedy plus time equals comedy? Like, are you drawing from sometimes difficult things and, making light of them?
So many. Breakups, loves, heartbreak, a lot of heartbreak.
Is that where the good stuff is, when you can actually, because it feels like that helps other people really understand that there's a future and that, you know, you can, you know, this feeling isn't going to last forever, right?
Yeah, for sure, because people relate to that sort of thing. Everyone's had heartbreak. Everyone has a family. Everyone has a mom or a dad that's like, you know, that they, or an auntie or an uncle, or the characters they can see in your show. I love it when I get that feedback of like, oh my gosh, your dad sounds like my dad, or your mum, oh, she sounds like my mum, or that sort of thing. I think people can really, I've got a bit in my show at the moment how, this is really out of context, but I've got broad shoulders, and I talk about how I've got broad shoulders, and the number of women that have come up to me after this, I've got broad shoulders too. And I'm like, yes, we do.
I mean, like, I'd rather have broad shoulders than no shoulders. Yes. Like, you don't want a slopey shoulder.
You don't want a slopey.
You want to be able to carry a jacket.
Yeah.
Look good in a shirt.
Yeah, don't need a shoulder pad.
Lizzie, I've never seen you coming from afar and gone, God, she's got broad shoulders.
How's she gonna fit through this hallway?
I'm never going to stop thinking about your shoulders from now on. And I love that there's a group of women out there who find a kinship in your shoulders as well. The new show, Says Who, from Lizzie Who, is performing at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival right now, at the Brisbane Comedy Festival after that at the end of April, and then playing at the Civic in Newcastle in July. Very excited to see you perform this show. Always very funny. Always great stories.
Yeah.
This is why I love chatting with you, because you have a lot of life adventures. Lizzie's life escapades is the terrible theme that I came up with, has been hard to say ever since. And your final choice brings us up to 2022. Which country and or escapade are we closing in on now?
Okay, so I'm in France.
Excuse me, please.
I know.
Nice for some.
I know. So I love travel, and part of this whole comedy thing has been able to do all the things that I'm interested in, like sport and travel and food, with a comedy slant. And I don't know, it's crazy, because I quit my job at the end of 2021, post-COVID, we were all let out again. And I went full-time comedy, and then I started getting these travel hosting jobs then. And I'm like, this is perfect for me. I love this so much.
Yeah.
And I did this travel show, just a web series, and we went everywhere. We went to like Fiji, Singapore, the Bunga Bungles, Perth, France, Italy. It was insane. And I remember running along the Esplanade in Nice.
Great sentence.
I know, because I'd be like, I've got to go for my morning run. Okay, it just happens to be in Nice. And I'm just like, what the hell? How did this happen? I still get those jobs and think, how did we get here?
Because you say yes to life.
Yeah.
And you're also very funny.
Oh, thank you. But I kind of think, like, so many years for me was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I think a lot of my 20s, like going overseas and stuff like that, I was just bored in my job. Like, I had that mentality of go to uni, get a degree, get a job, stay in job, retire.
Mm.
And then, you know, in my 20s, I was like, oh, no. This can't be it. There's more to life than this. Mm. And I think, you know, ever since I sort of had that shift, probably around 30, Saturn returns, maybe, around 30, I was just like searching and searching and searching for this, like, what do I want to be? What is going to give me joy? And then I finally discovered comedy. And I feel very fortunate to have discovered something that I really love doing, because I don't feel like everyone gets to do that. But I feel very fortunate to have done that. And it has honestly led me into some really crazy places and jobs and situations I could never have dreamed of. Because people say to you things like, oh, you know, like you're following your dreams. I'm like, I can't even think of these things. Like, these aren't dreams. These are just like, okay.
You know, this is what sets you apart from other people. You don't go, oh, I don't know if I'll be into that. You go, I don't know if I'll be into that, and I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
And this is where it leads.
You got to have a try.
You learn by doing.
Yeah.
And here you find yourself living the dream.
Yes, living the dream, whatever that is. But I think that's my mum for sure. She, growing up, she's like, oh, just have a go. Like,
yeah.
You won't know until you try it.
It's great advice. Mm. With all of that in mind, do you have a bucket list? Do you know where you want to go next, or will you know when you're in it?
I think I'll know when I'm in it, because for years I thought, I want to be an actor. I want to write a TV show. And then you kind of try those things and you're like, oh, I don't think this is what my calling is.
Mm.
You know, I think also that's getting older and learning what you're good at. But doing things like the podcast, I'm doing a podcast with The Tenors. I'm doing my own podcast. I love that process, and I never thought that I would. Until I tried it.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I think this is a space I want to be in. Obviously, I love comedy and I think I'll do comedy forever. But like, yeah, some of those other avenues, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is fun.
And what your passion is swims in all those circles.
Yeah.
I find this approach so freeing, Lizzie, because a lot of us are asked for our 5-year plan, for our goals, for our intentions, for where you want to go next, when a much more simple approach is just to be open to throwing your hat in the ring and kind to yourself if it doesn't work out or you don't enjoy it, and then going, what's next?
Yeah.
And that's clearly guided you through your whole life. Very inspiring.
Aw.
Very inspiring. And your final choice, as we go through you jogging across the Esplanade in Nice to bring us back full circle, realizing, wow, this is my life, is from the wonderful Camille, T'as de l'heure. Faire mordre la poussière de tous ceux qui n'ont plus faim. Je prends ta douleur et tous ceux qui n'ont plus rien. Was this in your headphones as you were running along that esplanade?
I like to do, listen to, songs from the place.
Site location, I do the same.
Site location, reading. I like to read from the site as well.
Yes.
So I just had this in my headphones and I just kept repeating it because it was just such a fun song to be in France to.
Doing your own little Camille beatboxing as well. It's a beautiful song. What an extraordinary life that will continue. Hey, have a great time over the next few months on the Comedy Festival route, the Comedy Festival adventure across the Australia. And thank you so much for taking 5.
Thank you, Zan.
Lève-toi, c'est décidé, laisse-moi te remplacer. Je vais prendre ta douleur. Doucement, sans faire de bruit, comme on réveille la pluie. Je vais prendre ta douleur, prendre ta douleur. Je vais prendre ta douleur. Elle lutte, elle se débat, mais ne résistera pas. Je vais bloquer l'ascenseur. Je vais prendre ta douleur, saboter l'interrupteur. Je vais prendre ta douleur. Je vais tout lui confisquer, ses fléchettes et son sifflet. Je vais lui donner la fessée. Je vais prendre ta douleur, la virée de la récré. Je vais prendre ta douleur. Mais c'est qui cette héritière qui se baigne, qui saute dans le tiède de tes reins? Faire mordre la poussière de tous ceux qui n'ont plus faim.
guest. I went into that take five knowing we'd hear about some awesome adventures, but I didn't realise it'd be a lesson in how to live well. To be reminded that sometimes you got to jump on the train before you realise it's where you're meant to be going. That's how you figure it out, right? This is why I love Take Five. It makes me think about songs differently, but it also changes the very way I look at life. And next time, we're going to have a big conversation with someone who's experienced it all.
We're on the corner every morning just to see who gets across. The civic fathers divide us up into cats and dogs.
Tim Rogers, a literal Hall of Famer in Australian music. Longtime frontman for UMI, he's a solo artist, author, actor, and raconteur. Tim is joining you to Take Five with A Living. Strap in, this is going to be a good one. I'll see you then.
Come hang out with your mates on Double J.
Loving great music is a lifelong passion. We're here to help you keep discovering. Hello, it's Michael Hing from Double J Mornings.
It's Yumi Stines here.
It's Dylan Lewis from Arvo's on Double J.
Great music lasts forever, and you'll find it on Double J.
Somebody that you used to know, but you didn't have to cut me off.
We're on DAB Radio in your car, or just swipe across on the Triple J app.